Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Omalai podcast. Today, I'm joined by Jason Runo, a beekeeping expert, and we'll be unpacking basically what beekeeping is about, and the opportunities and challenges that exist. Karibu sana, Jason.
Thank you for having me.
How are you?
I'm good.
When I met you, you were in theater.
Yeah.
How did the switch to beekeeping happen?
I would say it happened totally by chance.
Yeah.
First of all, thanks for calling me an expert. That's like such an honor. But I actually don't consider myself, let me say I'm a learning expert.
Okay.
Yeah, because what I find is I've not been doing it for long. And I find that there's so much to learn. So in terms of expertise, obviously I'm ahead of a lot of people, mm-hmm. but I don't think I'm at the level of... So my line is that I'm a master beekeeper in the making.
Mm. How did that happen?
So what happened was COVID, actually. Mm. So as you know, like before, all my jobs depended on people gathering.
Events.
If it was theater, events, corporate MC work.
Yeah.
So basically my bread was buttered by people gathering.
Yeah.
And when that couldn't happen anymore,
yeah.
One day, randomly, it's a very interesting story. I had a dream.
Yeah.
It sounds like a vision or whatever, but whatever it was.
Yeah.
And what happened was that a bee appeared to me. Seriously.
Okay.
I rarely tell this story, but I think I should tell it more.
Yes.
So this bee said to me, if you take care of us, we'll take care of you. So literally what I thought, what I assumed that would be, is that it meant go sell honey.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I've always bought my honey from beekeepers, always.
Directly.
Mm. So I'd interacted with a few beekeepers here and there, or people who deal with bees directly.
Yeah.
I never used to buy from supermarkets.
Yeah.
So... from there, I just thought maybe I should start selling honey.
Mm.
And then, obviously, customers. And in my nature, when I immerse myself in a world, I really dig deep.
Yes.
Anything I do, I don't do. I don't know how to have things.
Yeah.
So when I started selling honey, of course, people were asking questions. Where is your honey from? Yada, yada.
Yeah.
And you have to answer those questions.
Of course.
So that just encouraged me to learn more. And the more I started learning, not just about honey, but about bees.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it just became a world that I could not ignore. It just became a space that I totally loved. It's a space I felt a lot comfortable.
Yeah.
I felt alive. Actually, I feel, if not, you know that high you get from being in front of an audience?
Yes.
I get a similar high, but now...
With bees. Yeah.
It's like so fascinating for me. They are such intriguing creatures.
Where did you learn? I mean, where did you get all the information from?
So a lot of reading initially,
mm-hmm.
a lot of YouTube, mm-hmm. a lot of just anyone I could get who has worked with a bee, been around a bee, I wanted to get from them.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, there's a lot of people who offer courses, one-on-one. Then I eventually signed up for a course at the National Beekeeping Institute.
There's a National Beekeeping
Institute. There is one, and it's been there for a long time, since 60s, 70s.
Yeah.
So I was there in class for a long time, I did the one. So I've done a lot of short courses, which I still keep doing.
Yeah.
But I find like I learn the most by teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So the selling of the honey was great, but it was not where my heart really was. It mm-hmm. had its frustration. There's a lot of logistics. There's a lot of... And here now, the passion became the actual bee, not the honey. I enjoy the byproducts, which is the honey and other byproducts, but the bee itself is a very intriguing creature. And I learned so much about myself also through the bee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you set up your own...
So I set up my own apiary. Initially, the intention was to make money through production of honey.
Mm.
But then what I did... So my apiary is in Nyandarua.
Yeah.
So what I did is with
it's
time...
Cold.
It's cold. So you learn a lot. So what I did is I invited the wazee in the Kijiji, the ones who take care of bees as well, to come and bring their traditional hives.
Yeah.
So what we do is that we have a very good exchange happening where I teach them a lot about modern beekeeping.
Yeah.
And I'm learning a lot about traditional beekeeping
as well.
And the thing that's important that, you know, we sometimes, and I've experienced this, you go to a beekeeping class where the instructor's rubbish traditional beekeeping. Mm. They say, ah, hizi vitu zia kienyeji, unajua. But you find that there's a lot of knowledge, a lot of cultural nuances, there's a lot of things you can learn from traditional beekeepers that you'll never learn from any book.
Mm.
So I find like now when I set up beehives for people, I use traditional methods to attract bees and they work instant.
Interesting.
Yeah. So so in that way I'm learning not just by spending time with traditional and modern beekeepers, but by also teaching people who have never interacted with bees before.
Yeah.
I find like the biggest job I have to do is one, change perceptions. We only see the bee from the perspective of stinging, but there's a lot more to them than just that.
Yeah. How are you seeing the interaction between the traditional methods and like modern methods of beekeeping?
I think the two can work well together.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of, you know, they say tradition is peer pressure from dead people.
I like that.
But in terms of beekeeping, there's a lot of things that happen that we possibly practice still today, but a lot of times we don't know the why. Say for example, like now in Kikuyu culture, we don't understand why, you know, cukes are traditional vegetarian. Most people don't know that.
That's actually true. We actually eat a lot of
veggies. Meat veggies, was very ceremonial.
True.
And with meat, that culture of beer and alcohol and meat.
Mm.
It's because meat was actually very ceremonial. So a goat would be slaughtered when boys are circumcised.
Mm.
A goat would be slaughtered when there's a wedding.
Mm.
But with that also comes morats, which comes from honey. So there's a role that person who makes the honey plays within the community.
True, true.
So there's a lot of understanding in terms of also how to take care of bees because they were highly regarded. The guy who takes care of bees is someone who's very respected in the community.
True, true.
But what role did they play? And I think it's an important thing that we need to understand, not just look at it, to amurats.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so there's a lot of, and it has also helped that just before COVID, I had started my undergrad in anthropology, which is basically the study of culture and study of people.
Yeah.
Holistically.
Yeah.
So it also has become honey culture and the bee from a traditional perspective has become something that's very dear to me.
Interesting. Yeah. So how has that helped you and how's your apiary doing?
It's doing very well. Mm. We're doing well. Like I said, we had to change perspective in terms of we're not trying to just make sales. For me, it's more of a learning space.
Mm.
And I'm learning a lot from them. Mm. A lot. Like very interesting, weird things. Mm. Also, in terms of culture, say, for example, traditionally, you find women never handled bees. At least I've not seen where a guy is, a lady is the one who's known as Mtuanyuki in the village.
Yeah.
Not to say that women can't keep bees.
Mm.
But I found, like, for example, there's a women's group I tried to work with.
Mm.
Or was encouraging them to form a group so that I can teach them and teach them modern beekeeping.
Yeah.
But for them, it was not, the math was not my thing. They were like, ay, apana. It was something they wanted to discuss with their husbands first. It's like almost like they need to seek the permission. Again, patriarchy.
Yeah.
So it's important also, in as much as we are trying to push people to keep bees and stuff, you have to understand where culturally and mentally they are coming from.
Mm.
So I also now respect people's traditions, it helped me in the sense that, and that's why I said, I don't think I can consider myself an expert, mainly because I'm still very open to learning.
Yeah.
So a lot of times when I go work with farmers, I like to understand also what they've heard, what they've, what's their perception of bees, where culturally, where are they coming from? Mm. Then that way you also find that you pick up a few things that maybe you never knew before.
Yeah.
And I also try to understand. So like, for example, I worked with a farmer recently who had just put a lot of pineapple syrup everywhere.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, where does this... And she was like, this I learned from a guy who learned from a guy. So I don't rubbish things that farmers tell me. I try to investigate and see what value, or, you know, palipo moshi panamoto.
Yeah.
That idea came from somewhere.
That's true. Yeah. And maybe it works. Who knows?
And maybe it works. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Like, one of the things I found, like, apparently when you and now Amze taught me, when you take sheep wool, and light it in a hive, the bees come almost immediately. That's not something I don't know. I can't explain the science behind it, but it's something that they do. So I think moving forward, I want to commit myself to learning and learning a lot more, to spend more time with people who are doing traditional beekeeping, to spend more time with a lot of beekeepers. Not just to push what I've learned in the books, because modern beekeeping, you can be certified in a week. You can learn. You can know how to set up a hive. It's not hard stuff. But
how do you then incorporate all the other knowledge so that now you
exactly
can be wholesome?
A holistic and a wholesome beekeeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, because for me, my passion is the bee. I love taking care of bees. You've seen my pictures. I hang out with them.
Yes, yes.
I can't not meet or see a flower and not check if it has bees. So I'm trying to understand that and get into the psyche of also a bee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about training. You talked a bit about it.
Okay.
And the work you're doing around that.
So my biggest job right now is capacity building.
Yes.
So basically what I do is I handhold, eventually I want to sell products.
Yes.
Eventually.
Yeah.
But I found that I have to first make sure that we have enough competent beekeepers.
Mm.
So what I do is, for example, if you come to me, I'll come to your place, do a site visit.
Mm.
Then, depending on
do
your
you
budget,
charge?
Yeah, I charge for site visits.
Okay.
So what I do is I'll come to your place. We do a site visit. But if you have a big space, sometimes it's not necessary to do a site visit.
Mm.
If you have space, if you have trees, like if you have X number of acres. Mm. It also really depends on what the place looks like. Mm. So when we do the site visit, we'll decide on the type of hives and why. Mm. We'll talk about the setup costs.
Mm.
So I'll help you to set up. We'll set up with you.
Mm.
And then when the bees colonize the hives, I will come back.
Yeah.
And I will teach you how to take care of the bees.
Mm.
That is how to conduct your regular hive checks, which is one place that we are failing terribly. So a lot of farmers, some farmers think that they have bees, but in literal sense, what they have is spiders in boxes. So what happens that some farmers just have a beehive that a guy comes maybe once a year to check.
Mm.
Well, you can harvest sometimes even four times a year.
And how much per harvest?
So that depends on the type of hive.
Okay.
So for example, I'll take one we call the Langstroth. That should give you about 10 kilos per harvest.
Per harvest, that's like 10 kilos times 4, so that's 40
kilos. That's 40 kilos.
That's a lot of honey.
So with beekeeping, you should recoup your investment with the first harvest. And then the hive can give you another 10 to 15 years, depending on how you take care of the hive. So I need to teach farmers first how to take care of the hive and how to take care of the bees.
Mm.
Yeah, so we'll do our hive checks together.
Mm.
And then after that, after a period when you've conducted your checks and now you're ready for harvesting, then you'll call me and we'll come back and do the harvesting together.
Yeah.
Then after that one cycle, you are good to go on your own, and you can call me when you have specific situations that you don't know how to deal with.
So take me through the setting up of an apiary.
It's quite easy. So there's a lot of things we look into. One is forage.
Yeah.
As a beekeeper, you naturally, very quickly turn someone into a conservation person just by making them a beekeeper.
In what way?
In the sense that beekeepers, one, will not use pesticides. Because what happens is that the bees go to forage in your plants, which have pesticides, and either they die,
they'll be affected,
or they'll make contaminated honey.
Oh.
So we have a huge problem with contaminated honey.
Oh.
because like if you have warus and they're flowering and they've sprayed, and the bees go to collect nectar from. So honey is basically bee regurgitates. Matapiko ya nyuki.
Okay, that's true.
So they go collect the nectar.
For it to be organic, you shouldn't use pesticides.
You shouldn't.
Yeah.
And I also encourage people to involve your community, involve your neighbors.
Yeah.
Because bees don't know offense.
Yeah, they'll go to the neighbor.
Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't make sense like if you're on a quarter or an eighth of an, or maybe a quarter or half an acre. And your neighbor next is heavily using pesticides, your bees won't be saying, okay, apa ni kwa fence to Rudy. You know what I mean?
So it's important to
also involve your community. And that's why it was important for me also in my apiary to invite the Wazes to bring their traditional hives. Yeah, just for us to also look at it, you know, as a community. You know, we talk about, okay, what's this person here growing? Are they using pesticides? So it gets people thinking. So that's how. So you'll find anytime a beekeeper is going to the farm, they'll always have either a flower or a tree in the boot. It's a very normal. You also get to know your plant cycles. When do they flower? When do they have most nectar? Because you also need to understand those things.
Okay.
Because all those things affect your production. If the bees don't have nectar, if they don't have pollen, it means one, they're not being able to feed their young. Two, it means that they don't have enough nectar to make honey. So what happens that because they're not making the honey for us, they end up consuming what they had already. So you could be there as a farmer, and every time you go to your hive, you have empty combs.
Yeah.
And that leads to a situation where the bees can actually abscond. So you also need to understand the plants and the flowers. Also, the plants and the flowers that you have on your farm affect everything about the honey. Because honey is bee regurgitates.
Yeah.
So the consistency, the color, the taste, everything is basically based on the plants. Yes.
On what they're eating.
So if you have Baringo honey and you have Narok honey and you have, say, Kitui honey and you have Kisumu honey, they won't look the same. The color is different. The taste is different. Everything is different.
Wait, what's the best honey in Kenya?
I mean, that's just, it's like wine. It's like asking someone, what's the best wine?
Well, you know, I mean, some people say, oh, I like a Malawi.
So it depends. Like for me, I really like the sunflower honey.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Okay.
It's
from sunflowers.
It looks, it's gold. It's not so dark.
Yeah.
Acacia honey is also very good. Baobab honey is very good. And that one I get from, I have a farm I work with in Makueni who has a lot of baobab honey. Yeah.
Interesting.
So you need to taste, when you're tasting honey, you're literally tasting a place. Because it's the bees that have fed on the plants and now they've come
in. So the water, the soil,
everything,
all that stuff, yeah.
All those things affect the type of honey.
That's interesting. You spoke about challenges, education being one.
Yeah.
Pesticides. What are the challenges are in this space?
A lot of the problems we face are not very different from other agricultural products. One, extension services. Farmers don't have access to extension services. That's due to lack of training and just like a guy who comes once in a year to check your hives, tells you if you have honey or not. There are not many institutions that are training on beekeeping. I know I hear there's one in Baringo that I don't know if it's running. There's a National Beekeeping Institute here. Other than a lot of private people who are, like now myself, who are training farmers, that's one of the problems. Services, extension. A lot of times, farmers don't even have bundles to call. Because it's easier. Like now, for example, there's a farm I'm working with in Kitale. Sometimes you have situations where I tell him, nipigie picha. But I was scared. Ata hii simu niko nayo haina camera. Last month, nienda niite sijui nani. So, yeah. So access to things like those. Access to capital is a huge problem. Because hives are not cheap. Good hives are not cheap. And a lot of farmers will buy.
What's the average cost?
So it depends, one, on the type of wood that has been used. But you can get like a good Langstroth anywhere between 4,000 to about 6,000 to 7,000. However, some people who make furniture like in shags, you'll find, will just look at a beehive, see how it's then go make. So it's not a beekeeper who's making the beehives, and it's one of the opportunities that are there within the beekeeping space. So yeah. I tell people that there's so much, like there's enough to go around. So you can get into this space as a person who makes beehives. Mm. You can offer consultancy services. You don't have, not everybody has to sell honey.
Yeah.
If you
can create a whole value chain.
You can, I mean, the entire value chain, there's a lot of opportunities.
Yeah.
There's opportunity in terms of linkage. Mm. There's farmers who have honey and there's customers who are desperately looking for good honey.
Yeah.
That's another opportunity, linkage. Mm. So, going back to challenges, it's just mostly knowledge, access to capital.
Mm.
A lot of young people complain about access to land.
Mm.
Now, one of the best things about beekeeping is that you don't need a lot of space. Mm. Even like here, you can fit in easily by looking. I can fit like 40, 50 hives in this space.
What?
Yeah. Because it's literally a box.
And how many? It's true.
It's literally just like this, half of this table is two hives.
And then you'll be getting 10 kgs from 40.
That's 20 kgs from
20 kgs
from two hives, yeah.
Wow.
So a space like this, easily with 50 hives, that's half a ton of honey per harvest.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's a lot of opportunity. A lot. In terms of agribusiness and the fact that it doesn't take a lot of space, you don't need 100 acres, even on an eighth, depending on what it looks like. So you can get... Mm. So I encourage a lot of young people to do it in groups. Give them access to capital. Mm. There's a whole issue of accountability.
Yeah.
It's rather than trying to buy bee suits for 10 people, you just need two.
Yeah.
So now you just need to, you know, today Wamadai is one who's going to do the hive checks with, say, Doris.
Yeah.
And you can have that accountability. I encourage young people, don't try to do things yourself.
Yeah.
Especially if you don't have, leasing land is not expensive.
Yeah.
But if you walk alone, it's a very lonely journey.
True.
It's a very, and also bees can, but by the time you get to a place where you're comfortable around bees, it's a long...
It takes time.
Like now for myself, I'm comfortable and happy to be in a beehive. If I could enter the box and live there, I would gladly do that. But being in that space, because I remember the first time being in a bee suit and you open the hive and all of a sudden you have bees around you and you can see them on your veil.
Mm.
Yo! And then you can feel, you know, when you know the feeling of a bee on your veil over here, it's like a chopper. You know, you feel like you have a small fan on your face because they flap their wings so hard. And even that buzz, they actually literally have a buzz. You can feel it.
Yeah.
Takes a while before you're comfortable. Like one of my mentors, very good guy. I really admire him. His name is Mr. Nganga, like me. But he has gone to a point where he's worked with bees for 20 years, every single day of his life, Sunday to Sunday.
Yeah.
All he does is works with bees.
Yeah.
He's going to a point where he doesn't wear gloves. He doesn't, but it takes a while to get there.
Oh, to be able to get to that place.
Yeah, yeah.
You talked about the value chain.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we are focusing on the honey.
Honey, yeah.
What other things can we do with bees and where are the opportunities?
So there are, along the value chain, there's a lot of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So we base our projections on honey because it's the most consistent and it's the most consistent product, bee product.
Yes.
However, it's also the cheapest of all bee products. So we base our projections on honey, but there's also room to produce, say, what we call one, propolis.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked about propolis is the best, in my view, one of the best immunity boosters.
Mm.
Personally, and I touch wood and I thank God for this, I don't get sick. It's been a long time since I had even a cold.
Mm.
But I noticed this because of... especially in the time that I've been taking propolis, because now I take it very diligently.
Mm.
Luckily, as a beekeeper, we get it raw. Mm. So anytime I'm in a beehive, it's one of the things you can access. It's there. So let me explain what propolis is. So nectar turns into honey. That's what the bees get from the flowers.
Mm.
So the other thing bees get from trees is they use the tree sap from the bark and everything.
Mm.
And they come and make a dark substance, which they use as plaster.
Mm.
So if the hive has a crack or even at the entrance, the bees will try to seal that. Now, that stuff is called propolis.
Propolis, okay.
Yeah. It's a very sticky, but very healthy.
Okay.
Extremely healthy.
Okay.
It's one of the best immunity boosters.
Okay.
There's a lot of there's a few people now who have started seeing different vendors I know who are selling propolis. Comes in a what we call a tincture. It's like the nini for eye drops.
Okay.
And all you do is put like 2 drops in your water or in your tea or in your juice. I highly recommend it for yourself and also for children. It's a very, very good for your immunity.
Okay, no worries.
Other products, there's pollen. So if you look at bees closely, they carry what we call pollen sacs. So usually they get in the flower, they roll the pollen and store it in their hind legs.
Yes.
As they are getting into the hive, there's something you can put there occasionally, not all the time, because they use pollen to feed their young. And those things now, the pollen drops.
Yes.
It's very, very rich in protein. Extremely rich in protein. So you can actually also buy bee pollen. It's very good for protein. Again, also that you can eat either directly or you can put in your tea, in your water, in your juice or whatever. Bee venom is also very marketable. One of them, I think it's the most expensive bee product. Venom is actually very good for you.
Yeah.
Unless you're allergic. So one of the things I actually look forward to is one or two stings here or there when I'm working in a beehive.
And the way like the pub, okay, people who are not beekeepers, they're afraid of bee stings.
No, you shouldn't be. It's especially for people who have, say, arthritis.
Yeah.
It's a very healthy, healthy thing. Bee venom is very healthy.
Interesting.
So you find like in the US and in what they call the developed world, it's become a thing, bee sting therapy, where people literally go to see a therapist who helps them to get stung.
How about that?
Yeah. Another product is wax, of course, which we make from the combs. Wax is very good for making lotions. So again, value chain.
Value chain.
Yeah. Value addition is a huge opportunity.
Yeah.
Lotions, lip balms, soaps. Especially for people with skin conditions like eczema, it's very, very good to use beeswax soap.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's just some of the products. And you can imagine why beekeeping makes a lot of sense for farmers is, you know, if you're able to recoup, I don't know of anything else that can help you to recoup your investment in fast harvest and then have that hive for another 10 years. Or if you have what we call a because they are hives that are made from concrete, that's a lifetime warranty.
Forever.
And you're able to pay for that hive with your first harvest and then you still have it now for a lifetime. I couldn't think of a better business opportunity.
True.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, what you're talking about is organic. This is organic, pure honey, etc.
Yeah.
But some things we buy in the supermarket is actually not. It's like, I think, 50% honey and something
else. I make it
else.
Even 30 sometimes.
So, like, what's the problem? Why are we getting all this, you know, fake honey instead of the real thing?
I'll tell you this: it's not a Kenyan problem. It's a global problem.
Okay.
It's just so honey is in very high demand.
Yes.
Very high demand. Kenya, currently, we are only meeting under 15% of our consumption, of our supply, of our demand. We still have another 85%. So there's a lot of opportunity.
Yeah.
The thing with fake honey is just a factor of supply and demand.
Yeah.
Where the demand is so high, but the supply is so low. That puts a gap over there where now unscrupulous people will now try to meet that.
Yeah.
That demand. So people usually mix a lot of things, molasses, what we call skale, skaringuru. I've heard of banana. Like people do a lot of, so they put a lot of skaringuru with a hint of honey.
Yeah. Because when you taste organic honey, it is different.
Very different.
And then now you go buy this honey.
Yeah.
Into the market or whatever. And then it's like, I don't like sugar. So it is like sugar. It is like raw sugar. And I'm like,
It's very dangerous, especially especially for people with conditions like diabetes, because you find people like those are avoiding sugar.
Yes.
So they'll buy honey.
Organic honey.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
They buy honey. Some don't even know where to get organic honey.
Yeah.
So you find them buying honey hoping that it's organic and it's not. So you're really adding on to their problem.
True.
So as a beekeeper, and I always tell the farmers, don't be scared to share your story when you're setting up your hives, when you're doing your hive checks. Always share. Mm. And you'll find that once you get one customer, they will never. In fact, a lot of times you find people telling me, I'll wait. Mm. When is your next harvest? I'd rather wait and buy 10 kilos and keep for myself because I know it's that legit.
Yours is legit and it's okay.
Rather than buying half kg from supermarkets and stuff.
Yeah.
So there's it's another huge opportunity for young farmers generally. It's a huge opportunity
to be able to plug into this.
Yeah.
What do you see as the future of this space, especially now that you're talking about young farmers? It's not even, you know, we're not talking about people who've been doing it, you know, for years.
Because
obviously with agriculture, that has always been a problem.
Yeah.
Getting young people involved. Where do you see this space going?
I think the future is extremely bright because I say Gen Z came to fix the world.
Yeah.
All those things that we've been hiding under the carpet, that we are scared to talk about, Gen Z have no issues talking about them.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we must look is our agricultural practice. You find like with exports, in terms of export, people, when it comes to export, there's a lot of certification, there's a lot of, you know, wanting to know where this has come from. Mm. But we don't do that a lot for our local food. Mm. However, the demand is growing. You're seeing now there's been a rise in organic markets. Mm. People are really keen on knowing. There's a lot more young people, urban youth, trying to grow what they eat. Even if it's in a balcony in an apartment, you find, like even for me in my house, even here, I grow my own mint. Mm. I'm very soon starting to grow my own veggies.
Oh, you can make cocktails.
It's becoming a movement where people want to grow their own food. And even if they're not growing their own food, people are demanding more quality in terms of, I want to know where you've grown this food. Mm. I want to know where. People are more comfortable buying food from people they know where. You know, I see this person every day on Instagram on their farm.
Sharing the story.
So that creates, you know, there's a whole movement going.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, sky is the limit.
Yeah.
We're currently at, as I said, 15% of demand.
Yeah.
I think a lot more. I want to get as many more young people into beekeeping because what that does is that it turns them naturally into conservationists.
Yeah.
You grow your other food with the bees in mind.
Yeah.
Because honey, the other thing about honey is that it doesn't go bad.
Yeah.
During COVID last year, they found 3,000-year-old honey in one of the tombs in Egypt, something like that, and it was still okay.
Mm.
So as an agricultural product, you know the difference between honey and warus, that as soon as a waru is out of the soil, the clock has started. By day three, that thing is half price. True. With honey, even next year, it'll still be in perfect condition. You don't need refrigeration. You just need to store it right.
Yeah.
Huge advantage. I don't think any other crop can say that. Unless you do value addition, unless you dry it, unless which also is an extra cost incurred.
Yeah.
Honey, as it's harvested, you can keep it like that for another X number of years.
So as far as your training workshops, where can people find you?
Thank you.
ETC, how much does it cost?
So there's a lot of factors. I'm still trying to find a space where I can be based full-time, where I can have regular trainings. But right now, I usually just liaise with other people because also I realize not everyone can come to my apiary in Nyandarua.
Yeah.
But I have set up a lot of farmers. I have a lot of farmers I'm working with in Kitale, I mentioned, in Gatanga, in Tigoni, in all over the country. There's people I've set up for.
Yeah.
But people can just follow me on my socials at Jason, that's J-A-S-O-N, Runo, R-U-N-O, no Y. Please don't try Jason with a Y.
Yeah.
At Jason Runo, but you can also follow my business. It's at O-H-K-A-Y, Honey.
Okay.
O-K, Honey.
Okay. Mm. Thank you so, so much for this conversation. And I feel like, first, the opportunity is there.
A lot.
And also, it just seems like, if there was more capital and there was more interest, the space
would
just
Yeah.
Because the demand is there. And not only in Kenya.
Yeah.
Like globally. You said, I mean, globally.
Yeah.
So if you're only producing 15%
for your
for
local
our market. So you can imagine out there. And then also there's a whole organic sort of like movement,
yeah,
that's happening not only in Kenya but worldwide. So you can imagine now like what we can be able to build.
Yeah.
Or rather, if people went into beekeeping, you can make, you know, I mean, this whole industry. And hopefully, you know, I'm hoping policymakers, lawmakers, you know, can be able to like notice this space and not start coming up with regulations like those
like,
ones.
That was big nonsense.
I mean, the one about registering
beehives
and stuff. Yeah. And to have more friendly policies around this so that it can grow into something that can support livelihood.
I strongly believe we can sort out our global climate issues just through beekeeping.
Through beekeeping.
If everybody had, even if it's a single... And the first thing I tell people is that you don't have to keep bees for benefits.
Yeah.
You can actually just keep bees for the fact that it's good for the environment. It doesn't have to be from... So I have a client, like for example in Karen, only has... 2 hives.
Yes.
Luckily, he has a big space.
Yeah.
But the reason he's keeping those bees is because of his plants.
Mm.
You get. The other thing we discovered when we were doing Mazao Talks podcast with Semabox and Markup Kenya is that macadamia farmers who have beehives record a 57% increase in yield.
Wow.
So you don't have to keep
these. It's like a circular,
symbiotic. It creates a good ecosystem. It's a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
So we must think of bees like that. We must, first of all, shift and change perceptions.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people see like my pictures working with bees like, hey, Miss Uezi, hey, Apana. Mm. That perception needs to change. We need to understand and know that for every 3 spoons of food you eat, one is a direct responsibility. Of a bee. If we eliminated bees from our ecosystem completely, we have, I think, 4 years to live as humanity. We can't survive. 30% of our... Already we have a huge shortage in terms of food.
Yeah.
And thanks to bees, they take care of 33%, a third of the food we eat.
Mm.
So imagine taking away a third. Places like Baringo, we've noticed a decrease in honey production, because one, when we spread the locust, it affected the bee numbers, the colonies, so production went down.
Mm.
So we must be aware that we need these insects and they are so important to us.
Yeah.
They really are. Mm. And I think that starts from a young age, like with my kids, my daughter particularly, she's 2 now, but she handles bees like... Yeah, wow. She doesn't mind holding them. She knows how, but she knows how to. I wouldn't recommend that you go trying to touch bees and stuff like that.
True.
Luckily for her, she has me as her dad, so I'm able to teach her from a young age.
Yes.
But it's something that we must include in the curriculum, in agriculture classes.
No.
For us, growing up, agriculture was for what we call shady people. What were agriculture?
Yeah.
But that conversation needs to change. That was the biggest disservice we did to ourselves, where we encouraged young people to get jobs and not grow their own food.
Mm.
We must start having these conversations, because this is, it's a matter of life and death. It directly affects our own survival.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you.